98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, Burns and Gambo.
5 o'clock hour, the Burns and Gambo show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Ockchain Community Studios, and they are unveiling right now the All-Star starters for the game.
Put this on.
Yeah, it's on TNT.
Okay.
I don't know what. Speaking to your Contour by Cox remote, and it'll pop up a channel. Unless you know what channel TNT is by heart.
I actually do know what channel TNT is. I can find that really good.
Good, I'm glad. There's some channels that you just go to so many times, you just know by heart, right?
Yeah. At our house, it's HGTV.
On DirecTV, that's channel 229.
1041.
I know it very well.
Yeah,
TNT
1041.
Is...
All the shows that my wife loves, all the Property Brothers. And,
stop it. Okay, first of all, before we talk about
I don't watch those shows.
What do you mean? You talk about House Hunters International all the time.
That I watch all the time. That's my favorite show. That's my favorite show, House Hunters International.
Okay.
I love that show.
Okay, you don't watch any of the other ones, just House Hunters International.
I even bought Discovery Plus so I could go back to when House Hunters started in 2006 and then watch like every episode.
Okay, now that's a little scary.
Yeah, I only watch the ones in Europe, though. I don't care about like
you don't care about South
Mexico.
You're not going to buy a place in South America or Africa or Australia. It's just Europe.
You know,
that's the
Everything in Europe I watch. So, but I pass the ones in Mexico, New Zealand, Australia. I don't care.
I do enjoy some of the shows watching them with Krissa, whether it's the Flip or Flop or the Hometown or the whatever.
The best one is the one that Hillary always wins.
She
always wins. List it or love it?
Love it or list it.
She always wins. Like, it does, like, just pick Hillary, you'll win. Like, make a bet with somebody, Hillary's going to win. Yeah. They're going to love it. They're not going to list it. You're going to be right, like, 90% of the time. This guy shows them a great house, and they end up loving it, loving their old house. It happens there.
This love it or list it talk is really enthralling, but we're actually just kind of stalling time until we see whether Devin Booker is going to be a starter in the All-Star game or not, because they have started with the Western Conference and they have already revealed that it's going to be LeBron, Andrew Wiggins, yikes, and Nikola Jokic, who are the starting front court for the Western Conference.
Wiggins is a starter, huh?
Andrew Wiggins got voted in as a first-time NBA All-Star. Okay. All right. I guess if you say so, Andrew Wiggins is going to be starting the All-Star game, whatever. So if you can't tell listening in your car right now, we are buying a little time. That's why the starters, I should say, the HGTV talk while we're waiting. In the meantime, okay, they're pausing right now because they're not talking about the backcourt guys. Gambo, I'm going to rattle off three numbers to you. You tell me which one means the most to you when it comes to your Phoenix Suns. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Ready for this little game?
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
I love this game. Let's play.
Here are three numbers about the Phoenix Suns, and I want you to tell me which one means the most to you when it defines this team. They are 19-7 against teams that are 500 or better, best in the NBA.
Okay.
They are 19-2. In games against teams below 500.
God, they're just both so impressive. Okay.
Best in the NBA. They are 17-3 in clutch games, defined by 5 minutes or less, 5 points or fewer. Those are all three the best in the NBA.
Yeah, I can't pick all of the above, huh?
No, you can't.
Okay. I might shock you here. I'm going to go with the record against teams that have a 500 or better record.
19-7.
19-2. Listen, they're beating the hell out of the teams they're supposed to beat. 17-3 in clutch games stands out by itself. But you know what? We've talked so much about how good they are in clutch games. Like, I have. I mean, not that we beat it to a drum. It's always impressive to talk about. They're the best in the league in the final 5 minutes of the game. They're the best in the league in, you know, games decided by 8 points or less. But, man, teams that are good, they've got a winning percentage of over 700.
It's insane, right?
They're
700.
Yeah, what's the win percent? You said you did some, it was 700?
73%, I believe.
That's unbelievable. Like that against good teams. Okay, they're 19-2 against bad teams. Okay, they beat bad teams. Great. They're 17-3 in clutch games. Okay, that sticks out, right? That sticks out like a sore thumb. But they have a winning percentage of 73% against the good teams. Nobody with a below 500. All the teams that are going to go to the playoffs, all teams with a 500 record or better, they're 19-7. I want to talk about that.
Yeah, that's a 730 win percentage, 73% of the time when they're playing a team above 500. Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because because come playoff time, the two numbers that are going to mean the most are the clutch time play and are going to be your ability to win against winning teams, because you're not going to be playing the riffraff anymore. You're not going to be playing the sub 500 teams. You're not going to be playing the teams that are tanking or doing whatever. You're going to be playing a good team every single night. So the fact that you're winning 73% of the time when you play a team above 500, I think speaks to a couple things. Number one, your readiness for the postseason when the quality of competition improves. And number two, you get up for those games. I mean, there was no doubt in my mind watching last night's game. Once the Jazz had most of their bodies back, they didn't have Donovan Mitchell, they still didn't have Rudy Gobert, but they had everybody else back. You could tell with the way they came out with their hair on fire, that game meant something to the Suns. That mattered. We are playing a Western Conference team that is elite. They're very good. They have one of the best records in the NBA, and they smoked them in the first quarter. Now, they scored only 11 points in the second quarter, so they weren't able to maintain that. But I think that game and the quality of competition they played mattered to them last night. It matters to them when they play teams that are that
good.
Why
does it matter? These games don't mean anything. These are regular season games that don't mean anything. It's remarkable to me that they have this ability to get up for these games. It does. They find a way to make these games matter. Because they don't. I know it, and you know, everybody knows they don't matter. You know, you're not gonna tank every game or not play hard every game, but man, there's no lull with this team. There's just no lull. They just go out there and win basketball games. The last time they lost a basketball game was January 8th. That's the last time they lost a game. It was January 8th.
I can't remember who it was. Who was it?
Miami.
They got killed that night. That's right.
They got killed. Yeah, they got killed.
That was the last time they lost, was that Saturday night against Miami. You know why? But okay, the why to your why, they love what they do. How many times have you heard Chris Paul say, Monty Williams say, Devin Booker say, man, we just hoop. We just hoop. That's what we do. We just, and within that simple word is this, they love what they do for a living, right? It's not work. It's not a grind. It's not, oh God, it's the middle of January. Who cares? This game doesn't matter. No, they're going out and they've got 48 minutes to be able to play a game with the joy like they were all a bunch of little kids. They love what they do, and I think that's reflected in the fact that they haven't had this January lull, this February lull, because they just love to go out and play, and they love to go out and win.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you could look at the games that they've lost, and you know, they lost on a buzzer beater by Harrison Barnes. They lost on a buzzer beater by Ja Morant. When they lost to Miami, Miami had two guys off the bench that just were unconscious, knocking down every shot that they took. Remember with Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Like, they couldn't miss a shot. You could almost explain the Suns' losses. Like, you could literally explain, you know, they lost 3 out of 4 early. And then their losses after that, they lost to Golden State. They lost to the Clippers. They lost to Miami. And, you know, it's after that, so they lost the 3 in a row. They lost the 3 early. And then they had losses to Golden State, L.A., Golden State again, Memphis, which was a buzzer beater.
Yep.
Boston, they got beat by Boston pretty good.
Slaughtered. Yeah, schedule loss
and
right
Miami.
There.
And Miami, that's it. That's their only losses.
Yeah. Nine.
And that first game against the Kings that they lost in the beginning of the season was also on a buzzer beater.
Harrison Barnes.
That's right, yeah. It's remarkable. And we're going to continue to gush about him to the point where the 17-3 in clutch minutes, it's funny how that has become so much of a habit now, so much of a thing that we've come to expect. I don't want to take that for granted. You know, I don't want us to go, oh yeah, they're 17-3 in clutch time and act like it's not a big deal. And I'm not saying you were doing that, but I just want to make sure that as that becomes more and more common, that they keep winning these games that fall into these clutch time moments, that we don't ever take it for granted how good they are in the final 5 minutes of these games.
Yeah, but you know damn well when the playoffs come and it comes down to crunch time, They're going to have, it doesn't matter, right? They're down 2-4. They're down, they're going to have this, they're going to have that belief that they're going to win that game.
No doubt. They made it official. It is Steph Curry and Ja Morant who will be the starters for
Luka.
Backcourt. No Luka. He did not make
Luka.
Reserves will be announced next Thursday, and certainly we'll be calling a couple of Phoenix Suns names on that day. But no Devin Booker, no Chris Paul in the starting lineup. Steph Curry, Ja Morant, Andrew Wiggins, LeBron James, and Nikola Jokic. Those are your Western Conference.
I have no problem with Ja Morant.
No. How can you? You know? I don't have a problem with Steph Curry starting. No, I don't have a problem with it either. It's fine. It's fine. As long as Devin Booker gets to go, that's all that matters. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it's not often you get a grudge match between coaches, but the NFC Conference Championship is exactly that. And the question is now starting to haunt Sean McVay a little bit. Can you beat that guy on the other side of the field? We'll see if he can next on the Burns and Gambo show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
Yesterday, Sean McVay, coach of the Rams, was asked the question, and it was a good question, and it didn't get much of a good answer, but it was a real good question. Kyle Shanahan's beaten you the last six times the 49ers have played the LA Rams. Is he in your head?
Knowing Kyle Shanahan so well and with the success that the 49ers have been able to have against you, is Kyle in your head at all, you know, in terms of trying to get past these guys?
No. What I do have is respect for these guys. They've done a great job. You know, you look at it, you got to play well in that 3.5 hour window that we're allotted. You look at the last time that we played them, didn't finish the game, but this is a really good football team. We have a lot of respect for them, but you know, we're competing and preparing to the best of our ability to go out and see if we can advance. But this is a really good team. Kyle's an excellent coach. They got great players, great coaches, good schemes. And so that's why they're in the NFC Championship.
What did you think he was going to say? Yes. Yeah, he's totally in my head.
I thought he was
going
to say, I'm blank and tired of losing to the 49ers. I'm not here to blank around. Now, you may be, but I'm not. Now, I'm going to blank and guarantee you that if we don't play up there Monday night, you're going to believe you're blanking, blanking.
Remember that? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I remember that. Oh, I totally remember that. 100%. Yeah. No, he didn't do that. No, he's not in my head. It's a good team. They're a good organization. Blah, 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 blah. But when you look at it objectively, the San Francisco, and look, we went through this ourselves around here up until week four of this past season, Gambo. The LA Rams owned the Arizona Cardinals, and you could argue they still do. The Cardinals beat them that one day, week four of this past NFL season, but it's been nothing but just total failure against the Rams ever since, and certainly even before that day. We know of the ownership of which this reporter speaks, and it is fair to wonder if Kyle Shanahan just knows how to beat the LA Rams. It's 6 straight and 7 of 10. He kind of has a thing for him.
Yeah, no, maybe he should have got old Bobby Knight. I'm sick and tired of losing to Purdue on everybody. I mean, maybe he should have. And maybe if he loses this game, the next time he gets asked about it next year, he might go Bobby Knight.
Maybe he will.
I'm sick and tired of losing to Purdue. But listen, Shanahan's owned him. Was it 6 in a row, 7 out of 10? And it's been pure domination. And even this year, I mean, he had a chance to win the division, and they lost that game, and they needed the Cardinals to lose to Seattle, which happened. But yeah, I mean, I think it's something that it's crazy just how this works, because McVay has owned Kingsbury, but McVay is, you know, but Shanahan owns McVay. It's just crazy how the circle works like that. Cliff doesn't own anybody, but Cliff did get a win this year against McVay, but they did beat Shanahan twice this year, right? I mean, he beat Shanahan both times this year.
Yeah, he did. He did. So
I mean, they're one win away from going to the Super Bowl, and Cliff beat him twice. So yeah. Maybe it's just weird how that whole dynamic works.
And because of that, it's hard to know who to pick for this game this weekend. You know, because everything about it says the Rams. The Rams have the better quarterback. The Rams have the better skill position players for the most part. The Rams have Aaron Donald. The Rams have Von Miller. The Rams have this. The Rams have that. They're at home. Blah, blah, blah. But you look at what happened the last time these two teams played. You look at the, and I told you earlier, and you were shocked by this, but there is a ticket resale site that is estimating that 65% of the fans in attendance on Sunday will be 49er fans.
I'm blown away by this.
The last time they played in week 18, Vivid Seats, that's the name of the company, they estimated the crowd at about 60% 49er fans. They think it's going to be even more this time around.
I mean, these things are just so stupid. We're going to put a zip code in, and you can only buy tickets if you're in this zip code. That never works, Bernsey. Like, it never works.
Of course not.
Because there's tons of people who have no interest in going to the game that get the tickets and they sell them. I mean, that's their job is to buy as many tickets as they can. Why? Because I can buy four tickets for $600 and I can sell them for $6,000.
It presumes.
They don't care about zip codes.
It's so silly. It presumes that nobody living within the LA zip codes is any kind of a capitalist at all, right? Well, everybody's living here. They would never do that. They would never resell their tickets to somebody else. Are you kidding me? You know, knowing that you can buy it for $200 and sell it for $800, you can buy it for $300 and sell it for $1,500. Right. What, you don't think capitalists live in the Los Angeles zip codes? I mean, give me a break. Of course they're going to resell them.
I think there's more people that are buying tickets to sell them than there are to go to the game. And that's why that proves it. There are more people that just look at that. Capitalism, right? It's a business. It's a business. I'm going to buy these tickets and I'm going to sell them. This is going to be a 49er fan. It's going to pay me a fortune for it. I'm going to turn 600 into 6,000. I mean, it's an easy way to make money.
Sure.
It's an easy way to make money.
And look, I don't want to be that guy throwing rocks in a glass house. Okay. If the Cardinals were hosting the 49ers this weekend, we'd be dealing with the same stuff here. All right. I don't want to sit here and pretend for a second that we're above that or we've somehow evolved beyond that as a fan base here in Arizona. We'd be doing the same thing and there'd be a bunch of 49er fans there and all that. It's just nice to be able to tease somebody else about it for once in a while because we get so much grief about that living here for as long as we have and watching opposing fan bases come into our buildings.
Okay, I'm going to
root for the other teams. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I'm not going to ask it about you because you're in the industry and it's unethical. Your kid, Jake, has a chance to buy four tickets for a Cardinal playoff game against the 49ers. Doesn't want to go. He's not a Cardinal. He's a Patriots fan, the kid. He's not even a Cardinal or 49ers. He's a Patriots fan. Terrible job by the parents raising the kid, but that's another story for another day. Kid's a Patriots fan.
Wow, Gambo's taking shots at my skills as a parent. That's rich. Okay, go ahead. Yeah,
let me go on with my point. He comes to you. He says, "Dad, I could buy four tickets for this Cardinal 49er game for $600, and I could sell them for like $1,500 each. Should I do it?"
Can I counter your question with a true story? No, I'm serious. Can I counter your question with a true story?
You're going to go Super Bowl here?
Yeah. Have I told you this story before?
Yeah, you told me this story many times. I've heard this story several times.
Okay.
But he went to the Super Bowl. That was a gift. He went to the Super Bowl. He wouldn't have any interest in going to the playoff game. I'm just saying he had a chance to buy him and sell him. Would you encourage him to do it?
I wouldn't. I would rather he didn't.
Okay.
You know, I would rather he didn't. I mean, he's 25 years old. He's past the point of me having any kind of influence on him like that. Like I can't tell him, "Hey, don't do this or else you're grounded." Yeah, I'm 25, Dad. Screw you. But I would prefer he didn't. I understand where you're going with this. I would prefer he didn't buy four Cardinals tickets with the sole purpose of reselling them and make a profit. But if he did, I wouldn't tell him not to. Was that the answer you were looking for? Is that where you were going with this?
I was just curious as to where you would go. I mean, it's a chance for your kid who's, you know, newly engaged and going to be getting married and maybe starting a family soon, have an extra $5,000 in his pocket.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't blame him for doing it for the reasons you just described.
But you discourage him from doing it.
But I would say, you know, I mean, come on, I would discourage him from doing it. Just real quick. Okay. The Super Bowl story, because there's a whole bunch of our audience who probably has not heard the Super Bowl story. So we I don't even know how we were able to do this. He's a Patriots fan. We got him and one of his best friends, who's also a Patriots fan, tickets to go see the Seahawks Patriots Super Bowl, one of the greatest games ever played in the Super Bowl. And we bought him tickets, and they were for face value. We were very fortunate. We were able to buy him for face value. They were like $1,500 a pop. Again, it was like his high school graduation gift. We splurged. I really don't know where we came up with the money, but we did it. He's walking around then University of Phoenix Stadium on game day, and he's got his ticket to go see the Patriots and the Seahawks. We spent $1,500 for it. Somebody walks up to him and says, I will pay you $8,000 for that ticket that is around your neck right now, and I will pay it to you in cash. And he came home after the game, and he said, Dad, I'm telling you right now, I thought about it. I thought long. And this at this time, he's 17 years old. I thought long and hard about whether I should sell that ticket and just go watch it somewhere else and pocket the money. But we didn't.
And then lie to you and tell them
yeah, exactly,
you had a great time.
But we didn't. We went to the game. And obviously, given how the game ended for the Patriots, he said it was the best decision we ever made. I'm very, very glad I didn't take that guy's money. So I don't know what he would do, but in a real life situation,
today, right now, today, he's about to get married. He's like, damn, I wish I'd have that.
Oh, he just would have spent that money on cheap beer and pizza. It's a real good thing he didn't do it.
He got a bigger ring.
You're assuming he would have like saved it and socked it away and been responsible. He was 17. He would have spent it on cheap beer and pizza. That's it. And it'd be gone. It'd be totally gone. He would have wasted it. It'd be blown by
now. And now he's got the memory of being at the Super Bowl.
Damn right.
There you go.
Damn right he does. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show. First, you can text us your thoughts. Let me remind you, you can always text us your thoughts on the FanDuel text line at 620-620. You can do it throughout the course of the Burns and Gambo Show. No Phoenix Suns will be starting in the All-Star game, but if one team needs to win a close game in the fourth quarter, Chris Paul is going to be on the floor of the All-Star game. We guarantee that, and we'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, Burns and Gambo.
For what it's worth, and it's not worth very much, because it really doesn't matter at the end of the day, but take it for what it's worth. Our own Kellen Olsen Gambo tweeted out 12 minutes ago. We didn't have the sound up watching the TNT broadcast when they were announcing the All-Star starters. Kellen Olsen was watching the program from beginning to end. Ernie Johnson said that Devin Booker was the third player in the player vote for the Western Conference backcourt. He was third. I read that wrong. Ernie Johnson says Devin Booker was third in the player vote for the Western Conference backcourt. So what that means is that there, you know, the vote for the starters, 50% came from the fans, 25% came from the players, 25% from the media. Among the players, when they were voting, Devin Booker got the third most votes among any backcourt player in the Western Conference. So
it's pretty good.
Yeah, his peers recognized him as one of the very, you know, and he is. He doesn't need his peers or the fans or the media, anyone to recognize him as for what he is, one of the best players in the NBA. But it's pretty good that at least his peers said, you know, put him up on that, propped him up the way he deserves to be propped up. So I guess there's that.
I got to get off of this TNT now because the Lakers are on.
Who are they playing tonight? What do they got?
Sixers.
No LeBron in that one.
No LeBron. Joel Embiid coming off of some good games.
Joel Embiid's been playing really well. Yeah. What are you changing? Well, you know what? Save it for what's on tonight, which is coming up in the next.
Okay.
Because I want you to tell me. So a week from tonight, we'll know who the reserves are. We know full well that Chris Paul and Devin Booker are both going to be named reserves to the NBA's All-Star, and whoever's coaching the Western Conference, whoever's coaching the team that Chris Paul is on, I guess I should say, because remember, they do that draft. So there's a possibility. Well, that would be fun if Chris Paul and Devin Booker are on different teams. One thing's for sure. In the fourth quarter of the NBA All-Star game, whoever's coaching Chris Paul, have Chris Paul on the floor in the fourth quarter of that game, please. Because Chris Paul, for the first time in his career, back-to-back games where he scored 15 or more in the fourth quarter of a game. He did it on Monday against the Jazz. He did it last night against the Jazz. And his shooting performance in the fourth quarter all season long has been extraordinary, what he's able to do in the final frame.
Listen, there was always a prime of an athlete's career. And for many, it was somewhere between the ages of 27 and 32. It was always a prime. And you know, because it took a few years to mature, develop, understand again, and just about every sport, especially, you know, baseball, a lot of sports, 27 to 32 was prime. I mean, you remember when, you know, kids used to go, basketball players used to go to college for 4 years and then come out. 27 to 32 was that prime real estate for a player's prime. what guys like when Chris Paul does stuff like this and plays his best basketball at older age, it just defies logic. It really does. It defies logic. Now, there are some guys that are just freaks of nature, and Chris Paul is one of them. I mean, to be – and he's going to be – and he's 36 now, but Burns, he'll be 37 in May. He's going to be 37 years old. I mean, to many, he's about 5 years, 4 or 5 years past what should be your prime, mm-hmm. and he's playing maybe some of the best basketball of his entire career. There's been no signs of slowing down.
No, yeah, he's going to turn 37 right about the time the Suns are opening up the second round of the playoffs on May 6th. He'll turn 37. It does defy logic, and I tell you, you and I, everybody, we were all thrilled when the Suns made the trade for Chris Paul. And by now it's been said a million times that the Suns have gotten far, far more than they ever would have bargained for with Chris Paul coming here. The finals, the development of Ayton, the partnership with Book, the continuation of what Monty Williams, the extension of what Monty Williams is trying to do on the floor, all of it. It has all been way more than any of us bargained for. But the one thing that has been the real pleasant surprise of all of it is exactly what you said, that the fact that at 36, soon to be 37 years old, there is not a single sign of slowing down. There's not a single sign of him getting old. Last night for three quarters, I thought for sure he was gassed. I thought for sure that Chris Paul spent all his bullets on Monday night, didn't have anything left in the tank for all the jokes about, oh, yeah, man, I'm ready to go tomorrow. I'm a vegan. I'm good. I was watching him for the first three quarters of that game, and he was not very good running the basketball team for the Suns. And then the fourth quarter came, and it was like that. It was like some alarm went off on his iPhone, and all of a sudden, okay, yeah, I'm Chris Paul. I'm ready to hoop. It's fourth quarter. Let's go. He was like a different guy out there.
He's averaging the lowest points per game total of his NBA career this year, 14.5. But you know damn well that if he wanted to average 17, 18, 19 points a game, he could do it no problem. But because he shares the wealth so much, his assists are actually higher than they've been at any point since the 2014-15 season. He has his highest assist, and he's happier that way. But it's not like his points per game are down to 7 or 8. Listen, we've seen athletes get old. We've seen guys, look, Larry Fitzgerald.
Yes.
We've seen Fitz go from, you know, being the most dominant wide receiver in the league to being a guy that was just okay. And it's tough to watch it. I remember Steve Carlton at the end of his career. And, you know, we could mention Willie Mays with the Mets. There's so many players that you see them get old. This guy came into the league in 2005. Think about that. We're in 2022. His first game in the NBA was in 2005, and he is still playing at a level that he played at when he was playing his best basketball of his career.
Yeah, and what makes it even more remarkable is that he went through a stretch there for about 3 or 4 years where it looked like the end was close, right? Where his body was breaking down. He wasn't playing at the same level. Think about that contract. Think about that contract that got passed on from L.A., to Houston, to Oklahoma City. And everybody was like, oh, my God, who wants Chris Paul, right? I mean, who's going to take on that contract? Who's willing?
That contract, yeah.
It was because the age and the contract and the fact that the player was physically maybe not able to live up to the terms of that contract made that thing an albatross. And it's like it's not just that he's playing as well as he was in 2005. It's that he survived those 2 or 3 years where his contract was way too expensive and his body was breaking down way too much. He got through that to play some of the best basketball of his career in these leagues. It's a story. We have not seen very many stories like this in the history of professional sports. We really haven't when it comes to Chris
Paul.
No,
he's got an opportunity to do something that's very rare. If he ends up leading the Phoenix Suns to a championship at any time in his, you know, couple of years that he's going to be here before he retires and he's part of that victory parade, he'll be remembered as a Sun. I mean, he spent 6-7 years in New Orleans, 6 years in L.A., couple of years in Houston, one in Oklahoma City. But all the, like, from 2005 to 2017, those 12 years, 13 years, he only played for two teams, just New Orleans and L.A. But I think that he has an opportunity to cement his legacy with Phoenix and be remembered as a Sun.
Sammy Hagar and George Thorogood are heading to Auction Pavilion for their Crazy Times tour. Tickets go on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m., but you can win a pair right now by visiting the contest page at arizonasports.com. Whole bunch of NFL news today, and finally, the coaching market starting to thaw out a little bit. And some of this news involves the Cardinals. Guys may be leaving, guys may be staying. We'll get you the update next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo.
Time for the What's On Tonight here on Burns and Gambo, the games that we're going to be watching this evening and talking about tomorrow. Well, we're not going to be watching anything tonight and talking about it tomorrow because there are no local teams in action tonight. The slate, let's double check to be sure. Yes, the slate is clear tonight, Gambo. You're free.
So what do you got?
All right. Well, I mean, I'm embarrassed to admit that, you know, this show I've been watching Station 11 on HBO Max.
You're all done?
No. I recommended it to our boss, Ryan Hatch. Okay.
Yes.
And I'm embarrassed to admit that Ryan Hatch, he finished it. He's done with the show. I'm the one who recommended it to him, and I haven't finished it yet.
Did he love it?
Yes, he loved it.
And you think I'm going to hate it?
I think, okay, it's about the end of the world, and when the world comes to an end,
Don't tell me what happens.
Oh, okay.
Don't tell me what happens, just in case I watch it.
Okay. It's just...
I know, moves around a lot, and you don't think I'll like it.
Well,
it
I just know for you don't like Quentin Tarantino movies, right?
No.
And part of the reason why you didn't, like, let's say Pulp Fiction, for example. One of the reasons why you didn't like Pulp Fiction, they didn't tell the story in a linear way.
It starts at the end.
Right. It starts at the end, the middle of the beginning.
I can't follow that. My brain doesn't work like that.
Station 11, there's a lot of that. There's just a lot of hopping around all over the place.
All right.
And that's the only reason. Other than that, I think you might like it.
Okay.
But that's the one thing that I know you, and I know you don't like that. And so I have a hard time recommending that to you.
So the other day, I tried something the other day. We gave it a couple of episodes, and we kind of like it. It's on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
So Prime Video. It's called As We See It. It's about these three autistic adults that have to, like, live together. And, like,
I've
each one of them
really
has their
good
own
things
story.
About that show. I've heard really good things about that show.
Yeah. And there's, like, a caretaker for them, and it's, like, about her story. And it's, like, two guys and one girl, and... You know, she works at Arby's and she wants a boyfriend, but her brother can't have like a regular boyfriend because it's pretty good. I mean, it's pretty good so far.
Okay, I've heard very good things about it.
And
that
one of
show.
The stars from Criminal Minds is on it.
Joe, I just IMDb'd it
from Criminal Minds.
Joe Mantegna is on it. Yes,
great actor from Criminal Minds. He's on this show.
Longtime actor. That dude's been
so
around
like
for a long time.
We've given it two episodes, and you know what? Kind of like it because we got finished with The Witcher, we got finished with Cobra Kai, and just kind of ran out of shows that we were watching. So now we're on to this.
Now there are sports on tonight if you're so inclined. There's NBA basketball tonight, the Lakers and the Sixers. Then later
people now are like, two sports guys looking at movies on Netflix and Prime Video. The two sports guys in this town.
Look, there's not every night is there something compelling on in the sports world, right?
Every once in a while, we need to be normal and watch something that other people watch.
Exactly, Gambo. Exactly. This time tomorrow, maybe we'll have more information about Adrian Wilson. Maybe we'll have more information about Vance Joseph. But as it stands right now, and I know these things can change, as it stands right now, it would appear that there's a good chance that Adrian Wilson won't be with the Arizona Cardinals organization and that Vance Joseph will be with the Arizona Cardinals organization for a couple of different reasons. Whichever one you want to start with, Gambo, up to you. Where do you want to go?
Let's start with Vance.
All right. Ian Rappaport today listed three finalists for the head coaching job in Miami. Vance Joseph was not, I don't even want to say finalist, three names that are getting second interviews in Miami. Vance Joseph was not listed among the three. It was Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator for the Bills, Mike McDaniel, the offensive coordinator for the Niners, Cowboys offensive coordinator Kellen Moore. He's reporting there's a belief coming out of Miami that they really want to keep most of their defensive staff intact. They really like their defense, and they don't want to change it very much, which might mean an offensive guy, which might mean no Vance Joseph for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah, Dan Quinn has told teams that he's staying in Dallas. So I know the Dolphins were one of six teams that had interviewed Quinn, but he has decided that he is going to stay in Dallas. It is interesting because, you know, the Dolphins, they haven't announced the completion of interviews, but they've spoke with seven coaches that we know of. Dable, Moore, McDaniel, Leslie Frazier, Vance Joseph, and Thomas Brown. So they've spoken with seven, and now they've got a second round of interviews that's going, and we do not hear Vance's name on. Now, there was some people that thought Vance was number two in line for that job, that he was probably the second guy. But if they're going through second interviews, it either means that they know enough about Vance that they don't need a second interview, right, or that they're moving on from Vance.
And you know what? I'm glad you brought that up. There's this presumption that because he didn't get a second interview, or at least he's not on the initial list to get a second interview, maybe they don't feel like they need a second interview for him. Maybe it's a mistake to take a Sharpie and draw a line through Vance Joseph's name like he's not going to get the job. But it would appear, at least on the surface, that if there's a list of guys who are getting a second interview and he's not on it, there's an assumption that he's not going to get the gig. But maybe you're right. Maybe they know him well enough they don't feel like they have to interview him a second time. So presumably that would mean if he doesn't get the Miami Dolphins job, he stays. I have not seen his name affiliated with any other opening. I don't think you have either. So if that's the case, the Cardinals would appear to be in a position to keep their defensive coordinator next year. I know things didn't end well for the defense, but I'd be a fan of Vance Joseph staying around for another year. He had that defense humming until about the last month of the season, and then injuries just tore it apart. So
I like him.
I'm glad he'd be staying, yeah.
I like continuity, too, and he provides the continuity. And, yeah, maybe you could do better, but, yeah, I'd be in favor of bringing Vance back.
The departure, potentially, is this power play that Byron Leftwich might be pulling on the Jacksonville Jaguars right now, because there was a report a couple days ago that had surfaced that the former Cardinals OC and the current Buccaneers offensive coordinator, Byron Leftwich, was the leader in the clubhouse to get the Jags job. Okay, sounds all fine and good. Reports surfaced today that the holdup of Leftwich taking the job was that he wants Adrian Wilson, the VP of pro scouting for the Cardinals, to be his GM. The Jags already have a GM. His name is Trent Baalke. People around the league are like, man, is Byron Leftwich doing like a power play on the Jags, making them hire his GM when Baalke might be the one trying to hire Byron Leftwich? And then in the middle of all of that, there's a report that the Saints have now asked for permission to speak to Byron Leftwich. So he might be using that as leverage to get what he wants from Jacksonville. And through it all, the Cardinals might lose Adrian Wilson when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and listen, I mean, if you got to get the right coach, you might have to fire Baalke. But, you know, he was fired by the 49ers. He was the GM of the 49ers, and he didn't get hired by anybody for 3 years. And then Dave Caldwell, the Jags GM, he hired him as a director of player personnel. And then when Caldwell got fired, they just made him the general manager. So he hasn't been the general manager there in a long time. His timeline, he was the GM of the 49ers. They fired him. Years go by, nobody hires him, and then Dave Caldwell brings him in as director of player personnel. That was in February of 2020, so just 2 years ago. And then 9 months later, he gets the job as the GM. So he's only been the GM for like a little bit over a year, right?
Yeah.
Year and a half, right around there. So it does look like, you know, Byron Leftwich is almost giving him an ultimatum. If you want me, I need Adrian Wilson with me. If not, I got an interview with New Orleans, and I could always just take the Tampa job in a year when Bruce walks away.
If A-Dub leaves the Cardinals would get a third-round pick, comp pick this year, a third-round comp pick next year.
Okay, so now I want him to leave.
It would also be really curious to see how many Cardinal free agents followed Adrian Wilson to Jacksonville. If A-Dub takes the job, does Christian Kirk follow him? Does Chandler Jones?
I mean, they got cap space, right?
I think they got tons of it. Tons of it.
Yeah, I think that they've got I might have to look it up, but I think they have the most cap space of anybody or there, right around there.
I'd be curious to see how many guys follow them. Big Red Rage is coming up next. Jay Feely is the special guest. We'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.